from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Rachel Miro in for Dave Iverson.
If I represent the one that did this to you, then cut away the part that represents the thing that scarred you.
That's Oakland-based Toon Yards. How often do you get out to see live music? You know, real people performing on stage in front of other people? The San Francisco Bay Area boasts an embarrassment of musical riches. Toon Yards, Scraper, Michael Cronin. And we'd love to get you out of the house in 2014 to engage or re-engage with the music scene. We're talking to local music reviewers and bookers about the Bay Area artists you have to hear and see this year. That's coming up this hour on Forum. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Rachel Miro, in today for Dave Iverson. It used to be back in the 1960s, we lived in a rock and pop world with a little bit of everything else struggling for the mainstream spotlight. Now there's a lot more space for alternative, indie, hip-hop, rap, metal, you name it. The genres have kind of equalized. And in the San Francisco Bay Area, we are surrounded by a sampler platter of bands and artists mixing and matching as they see fit. We've got a sampler platter of music experts here in studio with us today to talk about what's happening and what you need to check out in 2010. I'll start with Dawson. Did I say 2010? I'm behind the times. It's 2014. Getting used to it now. It's not February just yet. Dawson Ludwig is general manager of Noise Pop Industries, which produces Treasure Island Music Festival and the Noise Pop Music Festival, which is coming up February 25th, 2014. You also co-host the Noise Pop podcast. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
And we have Ian Port, music editor for SF Weekly. You'll be speaking on a panel soon called The State of the SF Music Scene. That's February 4th at the Chapel on Valencia Street. So you're all ready for this one.
I am. Thank you for having me.
And we have Anthony Bedard, who has booked live music for the past 12 years at the Hemlock Tavern, and for the past 20 years played in local bands, including Icky Boyfriends and Hank Four. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. Guilty as charged. Good morning.
And last but not least, Andrew Gilbert, a freelance writer who reviews jazz and has for KQED's The California Report for many, many years. Great to have you back here.
Thanks, Rachel.
Well, we decided we'd start this hour with a kind of round robin, four lists of three. We asked every gentleman here in studio to give us their top three picks for top local bands, albums, music venues. We've posted their picks on our website, kqed.org/forum, where you can check them out as you listen now to the list of music that we're going to play for you. We've got some awesome clips here. Why don't we start with Dawson Ludwig? We've got Social Studies. This is a band here in the Bay Area, and the tune is called Away for the Weekend. About this band, Social Studies.
Yeah, they are. So these guys are five-piece, what's sort of categorized now as dream pop. They're local, actually. Most of them, you can find them if you walk down to Visadero and venture into Mojo Cafe. You can find anywhere from three-fifths of the band there. They are, you know, the easy comparison for them is Beach House. They have a female-fronted singer. They play synth, but they have their own identity, too. They write this beautiful music that is just swarming with these reverbed synths and wonderful propulsive drums. And, yeah, they're actually going to be playing Noise Pop on February 27th, Thursday.
Fabulous. Tell us a little bit about Deaf Haven. Heaven, I should say.
Deaf Heaven. Yeah, I'm actually amazed that I get the opportunity to talk about this band. They're loud. They're, I would say, probably my favorite local band right now. They're a duo, and they make music that is a really interesting blend between black metal and cinematic sort of explosions in the sky, guitar-based arrangements. And it can be pretty jarring. So they released an album last year that was probably, I would say, one of the most critically acclaimed albums across the country. And we're lucky enough to call them, hometown heroes. They have these screaming vocals, and then behind that is this swirling guitar sound that just, you know, crescendos to these massive peaks and then sort of dissolves into these quiet sort of very difficult things to listen to, but it really is amazing.
So that was Dream House. Not so bad. Here I was bracing to be assaulted.
Right. Give us some time. Yeah, exactly.
Wow. Well, you've already run the gamut, and we've just played a couple of clips. Tell us a little bit about the Limousines.
Yeah. So the Limousines, they are a duo out of the South Bay, and they make just pure gloss synth pop. It is, if you know, music was an object, this would be sort of an iPhone. Like, there's barely any seams to it. It's overrun with hooks, and it's really perfect party music. They played Treasure Island Music Festival 2 years ago, and they played early in the day, but you know, they had the party going as if it was, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning in your parents' backyard.
Well, the clip we've got lined up here from the Limousines is Love is a Dog from Hell. Very fun, very anthemic. I feel, you know,
absolutely
a desire to pump a fist in the air.
Yeah, and they're going to be playing actually at Noise Pop as well on February 27th at DNA Lounge, along with Taxes, which is another great local band.
I know we forced everyone to keep to a tight list of three, but are there maybe a couple more names you want to throw out there?
Oh, several. Well, without stepping on the rest of this panel's toes, So Giraffage is another great act. He is a beat producer that sort of makes these really great pop audio collages that's dreamy but really propulsive. He uses a lot of hip-hop beats. Another great one is Jessica Pratt, who I think may have recently moved to Los Angeles. At least that's what her Facebook status said.
That's something we'll get into later.
Right. But she's wonderful. She's a singer-songwriter, very much in the sort of freak folk, Vashti Bunyan-esque, and she's absolutely wonderful, and she has a new record coming out this year.
Ian Port, I guess you're up next with right. One of my personal favorites, the Tune Yards. They moved to Oakland, right? So they're local now. Now we can claim them?
Well, they did. They've been in Oakland for a while now, at least for one album cycle. The leader of the project, Meryl Garbus, is originally from Vermont, but she'd been touring on her own across the country and eventually settled in Oakland. But she does this kind of, it's very difficult to categorize, but I'd call it experimental pop, drawing on all kinds of global influences. She's particularly influenced by African music, and her songs have this kind of rhythmic joy to them that I love. And she draws on kind of different modal and chordal ideas taken from all over the world. And yet, you know, she makes them very much her own. They're very personal and emotional as well.
Let's hear a little bit from Business. Get up, stand up. It's great music for exercise.
Yeah, and her shows are just huge dance parties. Everyone, people will go on stage wearing, you know, all kinds of interesting makeup, and people just get down and have a great time. It's really fun.
You've also listed Michael Cronin.
Yeah, Michael Cronin is, for my money, he's the best pop rock songwriter in San Francisco right now. He first sort of became known as the bass player in the band of Ty Segall, who he actually went to high school with. Segall recently moved to L.A., or actually last year moved to L.A. But yeah, again, L.A. But Cronin, as far as I know, is still here, and he put out his first album for the very well-respected indie label Merge last year called MC2. And this is just an album of 10 songs, every one of which could be a single. They're all just indelible, soaring melodies. He kind of draws on surf rock. He draws on like 90s alternative rock, but he's a great songwriter.
Well, let's hear a little bit of Wait. Very dreamy, very Beach Boys-y.
It is, yeah. And you can hear in a minute here, he's going to step on the afterburners like that. And, you know, he uses that sort of fuzz sound that's really popular here in sort of the rock scene to great effect. He uses it sparingly, and, you know, the album has flutes and violins and piano, but he really puts it all into just a fantastic, fantastic listen.
Last but not least, you have Nikki Bloom and the Gramblers.
Yeah, so Nikki Bloom is a fairly new local artist. She's married to Tim Bloom of the Mother Hips, which is a band that longtime local rock fans might recognize. And Nikki Bloom first came to sort of the world's attention with a YouTube video that she posted a couple years ago of herself singing a cover of a Hall & Oates song in her van. And they did such a like resplendent version of this song that it just blew up the internet. I mean, we put it on our site and, you know, it went to New York Magazine and MSN. And, you know, Bloom just has one of those great sort of roots rock voices.
Let's hear a little bit of Little Too Late.
Pigeon-toed and guilty, just a friend of a friend of a friend. You're taking a fall and missed the ground and just kept on.
Great personality in there, yeah?
Yeah, so she, you know, she kind of goes from these sort of bluesier songs, and then there's a couple other songs that are very sort of have a Fleetwood Mac kind of pop rock vibe. It's, you know, it's good Saturday night bar music.
Andy, I see you waving your hand over there.
Yeah, you know, one of the things, Nikki Bloom, she's also part of this great sort of Broke Down in Bakersfield, a band that really covers the classic country Bakersfield sound. She can do everything. She's a great singer.
Very versatile. Ian Port, any last bands you want to throw in there as we're moving along?
Yeah,
the
I wanted to get this San Jose rapper Antoine on here. Unfortunately, you can't really play his stuff on the radio, but he's a fantastic rapper from the South Bay. Sort of a hip-hop kind of punk vibe. He came out of the DIY punk scene, and we're seeing a lot of alliance between the hardcore world and the hip-hop world now, and Antoine is, I think, really one of our best MCs here in the Bay Area.
Well, yes, we'll have to shout that out to listeners. And I should mention, folks, if you're thinking, oh my God, I can't believe you haven't mentioned fill in the blank yet, we're relying on you to go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and fill in the blank. Tell us what we need to know about. Tell us about the bands coming up or fully established that we're somehow missing. Although this is a pretty extensive list. Moving on to Anthony Bedard, we've got the band Scraper. What do you want to tell us about Scraper before we hear a little bit from Liquid Lips?
I think you'll be able to hear all the things I love about the band in this clip. It's, you know, knuckle-dragging, remedial, straight-ahead, caustic, bracing, and yet very catchy, you know, rock and roll music. It's straightforward, borderline thuggish.
Thank you.
there's music that gets you headbanging right away.
Great live band.
Great live band. Where do you like to hear them play?
You know, they've actually been heavily in the rotation at the Hemlock Tavern, the club that I book. They just did a show there last week with, Generation Loss and a couple other bands. And they tear it up live. They had a single that came out. Ty Siegel got mentioned earlier. So Ty's got a small record label, and he put out Scraper's debut 7-inch. And then their self-titled debut album just came out, I think, a couple of months ago. And it's a 45 RPM LP. So, you know, you're looking about 10 minutes a side, you know, or something like that. And live, it's just, you know, it sounds
like a band you have to see live.
Great guitar sound, great vocals, great drum. Yeah, I mean, everything. They're a hot live band.
So your second pick here is Tony Molina. What do you want to tell us about him?
Tony is, I'm going to describe this as sort of, you know, it's sort of like New Pornographers, Weezer, but meets, Thin Lizzy. And there's kind of a weird Baroque element to what he does. He's got minute and a half songs, and there are these crazy sick pop tunes that, you know, we're kind of motoring along, and then all of a sudden we'll have a halftime breakdown where the tempo slows to half of what it was, and they'll do like a dueling guitar harmonic interplay, and then boom, the song is over, like, you know, a minute in. So he too, like Scraper, just released a 45 RPM debut LP called Dissed and Dismissed.
All right, let's listen to a little bit of Don't Come Back. So I'm experiencing a flashback to the 1990s, but Tony Molina is pretty young.
Yeah, and the other thing too is he comes out of the San Francisco hardcore scene, so that's even more a bit of an interesting backstory to him. That this is the kind of music that he's playing. He had a single that came out on the Matador Records Singles Club a few months back, and he toured the West Coast with another Matador band called Effed Up. Definitely not allowed to say their name on the radio.
Yes, please, no.
Isn't Slumberland reissuing that LP this year too, I think?
That's true, yeah. So, it's just one of those bands. It's just an incredibly catchy, you know, pop music, but yet has this whole, like I mentioned, these weird kind of Baroque elements, and then also that kind of Thin Lizzy vibe. So I think he's uniting a lot of disparate scenes in the span of like minute and a half pop songs.
Your number three is the all-female band, The Quaaludes.
This is an all-girl band, brand new, and they just came out with their debut cassette. So lovers of archaic formats, don't throw away your old cassette player yet, because a lot of action in the SF underground is happening on tape. And, I just saw them recently for the first time, and they've got a lead singer who is an absolute force of nature.
Well,
so
let's listen to a little bit of that. We've got a clip now called Know What I Mean. Sounds like a trend. You want to talk about it at all?
Yeah, they're a pretty, over the top, good time, you know, kind of debaucherous rock party, you know, and the singer, you know, loves to mix it up with the audience, and really just, you can tell she doesn't care at all about what you think. And, you know, that's something I always look for in a lead singer, a total disregard for my feelings. And, you know, and really, they're all four of them are very talented musicians. And like I said, they're a pretty new band. So, you know, who knows, you know, but definitely they bring, you know, it's wild and loose live on stage and very powerful and, you know, kind of chaotic. And
in a super quick way, can you explain for people who don't know what you mean when you say archaic format, what that is?
Well, you know, I mean, I think with the once CDs had established their dominance, a lot of people gave up on, you know, formats such as vinyl and even cassette. And so now, you know, those audio formats, people in the 8-track as well, even though the 8-track is the worst of them all. But, you know, people just kind of refer to them now generally as archaic formats. But that said, vinyl sales have staged a resurgence over the last few years, so that there's actually, you know, vinyl's not going anywhere. Vinyl's back and, you know, presumably here to stay. But I think everybody's really surprised about the resurgence of the cassette, you know, being – you know, it's something that's very easy to pass around. It's cheap to make and duplicate and hand around. And so it's a very kind of low cost, you know. And then I think the fact that it is an archaic format really appeals to people, you know.
We're a nostalgic group of people. Andrew Gilbert, I know you've been waiting there patiently. Let's talk about the Pacific Mambo Orchestra.
These guys are such a great story. And in a lot of ways, it's a only in the Bay Area story. So they just won the Best Latin Tropical Album Grammy. Total upset. They beat Mark Anthony, Carlos Vives. They're a great band, and they're led by Christian Tumalon, who's a pianist from Mexico, and Stefan Kuhn, who's a trumpeter from Germany. They meet up in the Bay Area, assemble this really good band, play for a year or two for dancers at Cafe Kokomo, get a great book together. They made this album, produced it themselves, and they beat all these really well-known salsa artists on major labels. So now their career's really taking off. Everyone's really excited about them.
Well, let's hear what the excitement's about. Here's a song called El Cantante.
Cantante que hoy han venido a escuchar lo mejor del repertorio. A ustedes voy a brindar.
So we're going to have to do the rest of your list when we come back in the second half of the hour, but tell us a little bit about what we're listening to now.
Well, that's a classic tune, a classic song by Ruben Blades. It's an arrangement by Mike Rinta, the trombonist with the band, and that's sort of one of the things that really gives the Pacific Mambo Orchestra a great sound, is they have a lot of original arrangements by members of the band. The baritone saxophonist Aaron Linkton wrote a lot of their charts. It's just it's great dance music. It's sort of classic, but they put a contemporary spin on this great salsa sound.
We're going to come back and hear more music, but here's a song by Angel Olsen called Forgiven Forgotten. She'll be performing at the Great American Music Hall in March. We're talking about music in the Bay Area in 2014. Tell us what you're listening to. What's the last act you went out to see? What's your favorite music venue? Call us at 866-733-6786. Email us at forum@kqed.org. Post on our Facebook page or head to our website, kqed.org/forum, where you'll see all of these songs listed. We'll be back in just a moment. This is Forum on KQED Public Radio. I'm Rachel Miro. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Rachel Miro, sitting in for Dave Iverson. We're talking about music in the Bay Area in 2014. And when we last left off with our panelist, Andrew Gilbert, he was about to tell us about singer Tiffany Austin.
Tiffany is a rising jazz singer in the Bay Area. She's been working with bassist Marcus Shelby. I think she's got a great voice. She's also a graduate of Bolt Hall, so if the music thing doesn't work out, she's got something to fall back on, but I think the music thing is going to work out for her.
Let's listen to a track called Listen to Me.
Growing strength.
beautiful, beautiful voice there.
She's got a show coming up, sort of a Black History Month theme show, Freedom Songs, with several other singers, including Valerie Trout, another fantastic youngish singer. And that's at Studio Grand on February 23rd in Oakland.
So what can you tell us about your last pick, Kevin Kolo?
Well, Kevin is the kind of musician to make you feel inadequate. He is 18 years old. He is a freshman at Stanford. I believe he's a computer science major. And he's one of the baddest Hammond B3 players around. He studied with Will Blades, who's a great B3 player in the Bay Area. And Kevin, he just put out his second album, Turn It Up. And he can play. He's just, you know, got a great feel.
Let's listen to the track called Donna Lee. Not too shabby.
Yeah, he's doing bebop. He's straight ahead bebop. He does this great arrangement of Come Together that works. You know, it's jazz, it's the Beatles, it works.
You know, it's interesting that you mentioned math and science. He's just studying on the side. And, you know, there is that confluence of people who are good with math and science, often good with music, too.
Yeah, it's true.
So we've been getting a lot of comments already. Frank writes on Facebook, "My favorite venue for live music is the Rickshaw Stop. They recently celebrated their 10th anniversary, and their booking is some of the best for new and up-and-coming artists. Highly recommended. Highly recommended by some of you guys, too, right?"
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
Rickshaw.
Yeah. Daniel writes, "Swing and big band is vibrant in the Bay Area, so please see events that include live bands and dances at lindylist.com. I should mention, since we're talking about .coms, kqed.org is where you can go /forum to find all the bands and the venues that we're talking about, the songs that we have been playing bits of, so you don't have to worry about taking notes on your end. So we heard about at least one venue for listening to live music. Ian, you want to tell us a pick for, you know, beyond that?
Yeah, I mean, I always love, as for a big club, the Great American Music Hall on O'Farrell Street in the city. It's a beautiful old Rococo building. You just sort of feel magical when you're there, and it has great sound, great environment. I love Tony's Club, the Hemlock, rather. The Hemlock is just, you know, one of those small, fun rooms where you always know that there's something good going on pretty much every night. And I'm a fan of The Independent, a club on Divisadero Street that's going to be celebrating its 10-year anniversary late next month with a bunch of special shows. Great sight lines, excellent sound, 500-person capacity. You can't really go wrong.
Yeah, it's just a great black box theater. It's like putting on headphones and having no other distractions and just engaging in the music.
And you see bands from the local scene that are sort of on their way up there, and then you'll every once in a while can catch someone who's just about to break out into, you know, worldwide fame. I remember seeing the band Fun there right before they blew up, and it was crazy.
Now, you've written about this being a kind of a shaky time for music houses in the Bay Area. Why is that?
Well, I think the music houses themselves are actually doing okay. There's a lot of money in the city right now. There's a lot of young people who want to go out and have fun. I mean, I think the shakier time in the city is really for the artists who are trying to live here. I mean, increasingly, you know, your musicians are just completely priced out of San Francisco. And consequently, we're seeing a huge flourishing of the Oakland scene, which should be no surprise to anyone, and has long been very good, but is getting even better. There are more venues opening up over there.
Such as?
Just to name a few, there's, you know, Eli's Mile High Club. There's the Uptown. There's obviously the Fox Theater in downtown Oakland that's huge. There's a great show there tonight.
New Parish.
Yes, definitely New Parish. So I think, you know, people are very concerned about what's happening, but this is going to be a mecca for creative people, and they're going to find a way to stay here and make great art here.
Anthony Bedard, do you want to add to that?
Yeah, I'll second it. I think that, you know, definitely some of the bands and even the people who go to the shows, that there's been a bit of a migration over to Oakland, and yet some of these up-and-coming local San Francisco bands like Scraper, Quaaludes, and there's a couple I didn't mention, CCR Head Cleaner, Violent Change, Swiftums. You know, these are bands that are here and they're making it work, and, you know, everybody's finding a way to, you know, to keep, you know, churning out, you know, great music. And so I think the economics does influence it maybe to some degree, but I think it's more that scenes are cyclical and things go up and down, you know, with bands or with groups of people kind of entering and leaving the scene for other reasons just besides the economics, you know. And it's pretty exciting, I mean, that you can go out. I was going to mention the Knockout is another, you know, great small hole-in-the-wall venue down in the Deep Mission. Another great place to go see, you know, up-and-coming bands. And I don't know.
Andy Gilbert?
Yeah, you know, the uptown scene in Oakland is really pretty extraordinary right now. Duende just celebrated their first anniversary.
Great place, yeah.
Great club, great restaurant. You've got the Sound Room just up the street, great place to see especially singers, jazz singers. Awaken Cafe is a real center for sort of jazz and improvised music. The New Parish is around the corner. A new venue, Studio Grand, another nonprofit. And then Piedmont Piano, which is a fantastic place, presents, you know, it's a piano store, so you can sit there next to a $100,000 Steinway and hear a fantastic pianist playing. And then just up Telegraph, you've got the 57th Street Gallery, which is has jam sessions on Mondays, books, mostly local artists, but great place to see, you know, local straight ahead jazz musicians.
Let's talk about new trends going on. I mean, there's been a lot of flex in the scene, people moving from one side of the bay to the other, moving to Los Angeles to try and make it big in that scene. How is that changing the flavor of the bands we're hearing? Dawson Ludwig, you want to kick us off on that?
Sure. I think that there's Anthony was saying, it's cyclical. I remember when the freak folk movement was really big in the city, and then all of a sudden, it's sort of there was a diaspora of sorts. And I remember vaguely that people sort of lamented that. And I think that's happening also with the garage rock scene as the OCs have moved on, and Ty Segall has moved on, Jessica Pratt has moved to LA. So there, I think there's a sense of you know, what's coming next. And I would say what is coming next is, you know, I see a lot of movement in like the beat scene, a lot of DJs and producers who are making their own music that stands alone, not necessarily as just a backdrop for hip hop, but something that is, you know, people go out for and see a guy behind a computer, and people pay tickets for that. It's wonderful.
Talk a little bit about the OCs. You know, a lot of our listeners will recognize that name and lament their leaving.
Sure. So the OCs, they were sort of the homecoming kings of the garage rock scene, which is what San Francisco is largely known for a long time, which included Ty Segall, the Fresh and Onlys, White Fence. Recently John Dwyer moved to L.A., and I don't think it was a specific we are leaving the music scene or we are leaving the OCs, but it was we are moving locations. And it was a little bit of a blow. It started the conversation and actually prompted a great article by Ian and SF Weekly about, you know, engaging in the local music scenes so we can preserve these artists so they don't leave.
Before we talk about that, let's hear a little clip of them so, you know, to familiarize people. So, Ian Port, you know, there are a lot of people who leave the Bay Area. It's kind of a feeder scene for some of the bigger music markets. Yeah, every musician wants to hit it big on some level, or most people do, I would say. But, you know, this time when they left, the artists made a point of talking about how the Bay Area culture has changed.
They did, yeah. It was very interesting. So John Dwyer has a label called Castle Face, and he was putting out a new San Francisco band called POW. And in the press release for this band, POW, who had a record called High Tech Boom, he wrote about how the scene on sort of 24th Street in Valencia had changed in the time that he'd been here, and how San Francisco was kind of filled with people who were tripping over their iPhones and, you know, sort of concerned with foodie issues and you know, very, was a very different city from the way it was when I think Dwyer came here from Providence, Rhode Island. And I think it was the late 90s when he came here.
Do you think his kind of charge is fair, that the Bay Area is being overrun by, as he put it, normals, and that's what's driving bands away?
I mean, I think San Francisco is always changing and it's always different. And we always have this tendency to kind of view the city as it was when we first came here, as this ideal sense of the city. I know I feel like that, and I haven't really been here that long. I'm a Bay Area native, but I moved back here in 2008. And I remember I used to live down the street from the OCs in the Lower Haight, and I can kind of lament the sort of characters that you used to see there that you don't see as much anymore. But I mean, you know, cities always change, and there are still plenty of interesting, weird people here making great music.
And even weird people use smartphones and eat sandwiches.
They too. And a lot of those weird people care about what goes in their sandwich and, you know, tend to play with their phone a lot. So,
Anthony Bedard, I see you anxiously waiting to speak there.
Oh, anxious. Wow. Well, let's see. I would say that San Francisco has always been a magnet for people with certain artistic inclinations. It's sort of a carpetbagger town, and it always has been. People come here and don't always stay, or they come here, live here for certain periods of time. You know, there's always been – I think there's a great lineage of San Francisco rock going back to, you know, the 70s. Like, if you want to look at the punk scenes or Ralph Records with the Residents – Dead Kennedys, weird experimental electronic music, you know, like Tuxedo Moon, you know, through the 80s, you know, you had Flipper, you know, and I think you can put some of these bands, you know, like the OCs or, you know, maybe like CCR Head Cleaner and some of these other acts in that lineage. And I think that's, you know, that kind of, you know, San Francisco used to be a low rent, scrappy town. And, you know, the two tech booms that have happened here have altered that. But, you know, it's just a mutating organism. And so, you know, because it's an artistic mecca of sorts to people, there will continue to be people attracted to live here and to move here and to play music in the face of all the, you know, in the face of all the odds. I mean, what is it about CCR Head Cleaner? Those guys are just hunkered down in their studio night after night perfecting this really crazy form of, evil psychedelia. And, you know, they've gotten great over, you know, they used to be, you know, just one of, you know, a regular local band out on the scene doing their thing. And now all of a sudden, you know, they're going out on national tour and could be touring the world. And it's a really, you know, challenging, you know, abrasive form of rock music. And, you know, they're doing that in the middle of all of this tech boom.
I guess you could say, you know, this is a region that pulls in talent from all over the world and then sends it back out again. And of course, if you can't afford the rents in San Francisco, there's always Oakland. Let's turn now to Jason in San Francisco.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, good. You're going to tell us about a great show you saw?
Yeah, I was actually last week in at the Mill Fire. We saw Crow and Twine and Before the Brave, and I guess Mill Fire only holds like 190 people, and there was like 350 people there. It was an amazing show, and I just wanted to shout out to those guys because we had a great time. They're both local San Francisco bands, so
I hope
if you haven't heard of them, check them out.
I hope the fire marshal's not listening.
Or the Mill Fire.
Anyway, it was a great experience, so it was awesome.
Thank you so much, Jason. Great suggestion. Yeah. One listener writes, she's an animal, swinging metal rock and roll with screaming and straight vocals from Walnut Creek. Noelle writes, Judgment Day from Oakland, a string metal band.
Judgment Day.
There we go. That's getting some. Let's see. Another one. Sandy's is a new project from Alexi Glickman, inspired by big star-infused guitar pop in reverby open tunings. He grew up writing songs and surfing in Santa Monica. And also, this person suggests Rustang started out as a moped gang in an Outer Sunset garage and released their first album on vinyl in 2009. So a lot of great options out there. Let's turn now to Keith in Oakland.
Hey, so when I'm not listening to KQED, I like going to punk rock shows. And
awesome.
One of the best bands I've seen lately is a band called No Business out of Oakland, and they play like a kind of late, I don't know, 70s LA kind of thing. And they're really great, and I agree that Tony Molina and Violent Change and Quaaludes are all really cool too. So, good stuff going on these days.
Good stuff going on. I'm wondering who wants to talk about something I've been reading a lot about but not been completely exposed to, homespun psychedelic pop. Anyone?
Does Swiftums fall into that category?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's lots of homespun psychedelic pop in this town. That's, we specialize in that. You should talk about Swiftums, though.
Yeah, do we have a clip? I wish we could play some Swiftums. Chris McVicker, he was writing some songs for Hunks and His Punks, and then he started his own project. He put out his debut album on Holy Mountain Records called Don't Trip. I think that came out about a year or two ago. Now he's got some 7 inches out. Willie, I think, is the new one. And he's kind of got a, you know, I won't even call it a falsetto, but he's kind of got like a high register, you know, maybe kind of cherubic voice. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know, just, I don't know, utterly sick pop songs, like really, you know, just stick in your head, catchy, melodic flypaper songs that once you hear, you know, you're like, wow, you know, this is, you know, and again, like this is sort of coming out of a, you know, DIY, you know, bedroom pop, you know, where it's, you know, and then he's putting the band together to flesh the songs out for a live setting. So I think, you know, there's always going to be the great American tradition of the bedroom songwriter who then, you know, manages to put a band together and inflict his or her vision on the world.
Yeah. For happy fans, Ian Port.
Yeah, well, I wanted to mention another band called Painted Palms that is kind of doing homespun psychedelic pop in a slightly different vein. They're more sort of synth and laptop based. But they're taking influence from like Syd Barrett and like the late Beatles and actually turning out really good pop songs, but with kind of very post-millennial textures of, you know, these whirling sort of dreamy, watery, psychedelic synth textures and stuff like that. And they just put out their debut album. I think it's called Forever. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
And played a big show at the Rickshaw Stop, and I'd recommend them to people as well.
Well, we've had so many band names here, I'm losing track. So we may have already mentioned this band. Harold writes, Whisker Man, Oakland-based psychedelic folk rock band, pulls you right into its center with incredible musicianship, eerie songwriting, and new material at every show. Another person writes in, do you know Bear Lincoln? They put on a killer live show, perform all over the Bay Area, and have a fabulous recorded output. Anyone? Could be.
No.
We might be getting some band members here. Juliana writes, no Emily Danger, no Knots and X's, still a list full of lots of great music. Gabe writes, do your guests know Moira Scar and or Floating Corpses?
Yeah, both those bands play at the Hemlock. Moira Scar just actually played a show at the Hemlock in late December, opening for Jesse Evans, who is she was in San Francisco for years and played in bands called The Vanishing and The Subtonics, sort of like a post-punk goth, you know, kind of vibe. And then she moved to Berlin, and now she's doing a kind of a, I would describe it maybe as a kind of a cab, you know, sort of like a post-punk noir cabaret.
Post-punk noir cabaret.
You know, really kind of, you know, goth, you know, and definitely with heavy goth overtones. And Moira Scar, you know, played a show with Jesse at the Hemlock. And yeah, it's what was the other one? Floating Corpses? Yeah, great, you know, great band name.
Yeah, fabulous band name. We're hearing a lot of sort of hyphenated music when we're talking about genre. It does seem like, I guess now that there aren't bins, right? Well, we're not at record stores looking at bins. It doesn't matter anymore.
Yeah, I think it's the, you know, it's the endless recombinations of influences, and I think hyphens are an inherent danger of being in the new live music game. You're gonna have to familiarize yourself with some of those terms, or just get used to the idea of describing things with multiple descriptors.
Sometimes contradictory even.
Yeah.
Right. That's just where we are. Peter writes Beats Antique. And let's see, we've got Bruce on Facebook saying, check out local singer-songwriter Dave Hudson and Boxcar Saints. Compelling songs with thoughtful lyrics. Elizabeth writes, Oatmeal Cookie, based in Boulder Creek. That's Santa Cruz. They played in San Jose and other local venues, too. Loud, fun, rock and roll. You're listening to Forum, and we're talking to Ian Port, music editor of SF Weekly, Anthony Bedard, who has booked live music for the past 12 years at Hemlock Tavern and played in a bunch of bands locally, Dawson Ludwig, general manager of Noise Pop Industries, and Andrew Gilbert, a freelance writer who also reviews jazz for KQED's The California Report. This is a fundraising period for KQED Public Radio. For more information about how to support KQED, go to kqed.org. I'm Rachel Miro, sitting in for Dave Iverson. So with that, let's go to another phone call. We've got David in San Francisco.
Hi, good morning. I just wanted to put a shout out for a band, I think they're from L.A., called Orgone, and also, but more for the genre as well, it's more of like funk and soul. Maybe your guest could speak to that, because it tends to get overlooked. Thanks.
Great question. Anybody want to take it on?
Yeah, there's a great soul singer called Quinn DeVoe. And he has this really rich voice that really carries well. He played one of our events called 20th Street Block Party, which is free. And it had the entire crowd just completely committed to him. He could have, you know, told them to, you know, march across the city and they would have. He's really captivating.
Yeah, and earlier last month, a group called Undercover Presents did a show for Three Nights at the Independent where they brought in a bunch of different local musicians to each cover one song off of the Sly and the Family Stone album, Stand. And Stand is one of those all-time great sort of psychedelic soul funk albums. Came out, you know, at the peak of the 60s in 1969, and of course Sly and the Family Stone is a Bay Area project. They had Con Brio, which is a good sort of funk band from the San Francisco, Marcus Shelby, the jazz player, and a ton of other great local musicians. So there's definitely a vibrant funk soul scene here in the city.
You know, we've been talking a lot about geography and how many of these bands either came from someplace else or are leaving for someplace else or collaborating with somebody from someplace else. It's so easy to do these days. You just send someone a track and say, hey, I'm thinking about this. What do you have to say about it, artistically speaking? Is there anything about the Bay Area that you think either the geography, the culture, the collaborations between individuals that makes this scene unique?
San Francisco, it's an interesting thing that there's only not even a million people that live here. I think it's got almost a disproportionate cultural influence, or there's so much stuff going on here. And yet, you know, say in L.A., there's 7 million people. Here, there's not even 1 million. And yet we've got this huge amount of, you know, musical activity going on, you know, not only in San Francisco, but in the greater Bay Area. I think San Francisco, it seems to me, you know, when people, I don't think you can say that there's one San Francisco sound, because right. It's a collection of micro scenes, or it's a collection of, you know, of different groups of people, all of whom are interested in certain genres or subgenres of music. And so, you know, you wind up getting bands who, you know, sort of perfect their musical obsession or their musical vision, and they, like you said, you know, then they can go out and export that sound out to the world. But, you know, I mean, yeah, whether you're talking about funk or soul or, you know, garage rock or, you know, laptop, you know, beats. And I mean, all of that stuff goes on here. And I don't think, you know, you can point to anyone overriding San Francisco sound.
Yeah. And that actually that micro scene element that you're talking about, I think largely has to do with the geography and topography of the city. You know, the hills sort of isolate neighborhoods. The Oakland is much further away than, say, Brooklyn is to Manhattan. And I think that creates a strong sense of identity within, you know, a neighborhood, a city, even a block. I remember when John Dwyer left Lower Haight, and it was something that we lamented. Yeah.
And I think, too, I mean, you have such a vibrant, you know, there aren't that many large metropolitan agglomerations in the country, and this is one of the great ones. And you find a lot of young creative people simply want to live in cities. And, you know, outside of your New York and LA, San Francisco is definitely one of those regions where people can come and live close to each other and bounce from one club to another on a Saturday night. And, you know, that's always going to be a major attraction here.
Mm-hmm. I think that the the diversity of the area in the sense that there aren't really sort of huge communities of international communities. So meaning you don't have a huge community of Brazilian musicians, of Cuban musicians, of Puerto Rican musicians, or Indian musicians, and people end up working together in these really interesting ways, and people are interested in working cross traditions, cross genres, and so you end up with some great collaborations happening, you know, things that not just a one-off, but people who work together for years and sort of figure out ways that they can bring their sounds together.
You know, I'll give the last comment to Ian Porter. I'm just wondering if you can talk about the concept of use it or lose it. If you don't go out to see bands, the venues die and a lot of bad things happen.
Sure, yeah. I mean, I've talked about this with a lot of people in the scene that, you know, people lament the loss of a band or the loss of a club. And over the years, we've seen a lot of sort of smaller rock live music spaces close down in the city, turn into cocktail bars, turn into restaurants, whatever. You know, and I wrote a story about this earlier in the year, kind of just making the point that places that are full every night generally stay open. And, you know, in San Francisco now, everyone is looking to make money on land and on real estate. But, you know, clubs that do a good job and that are supported by, you know, their community are going to stick around. And if you want to have a vibrant live music scene in here, you need to go out and support the clubs and support the musicians who play there.
Well, with that PSA, we'll bring this segment to a close. We'll end with a tune by local jazz artist Rhonda Benin titled I've Got Rhythm. I want to thank all of our guests, Ian Port, music editor of SF Weekly, Anthony Bedard of Hemlock Tavern, Dawson Ludwig of Noise Pop Industries, and Andrew Gilbert, who reviews jazz for KQED's California Report, among other venues. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi, and Tina Lauerberg. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai, with online support from David Marks. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. I'm Rachel Miro, in for Dave Iverson, and this is Forum on KQED Public Radio.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.